from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Jeffrey Wright and Company program here on 92.9 FM ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM ESPN, or you can listen on the AM dial, 680 AM, anytime, anywhere. You can also keep up with us if you're outside of the market. You can keep up with us on the Odyssey app. It's free to download. It's free to listen. Download and subscribe to 92.9 on the Odyssey app. Sheila Sadeghi is producing the program for us. Glad that Sheila is with us. My company this week is, of course, the former longtime Tiger football beat writer, also former associate athletic director over at the U of M. He's on Twitter, on X, at Phil_Stukenborg. Phil, good day, sir.
Good afternoon to you.
Whew, let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. Of course, it's Friday, so we'll stick with our typical theme. We'll preview the weekend. What are we going to be talking about on Monday? And this morning, I was reading about the closing ceremonies. I think we might be talking about the closing ceremonies because we've had a few hints about indeed what it could look like, and I very much think that we should take a look at that. Also, of course, this weekend we'll have the men's and women's U.S. teams battling for the gold medal. We know, of course, the men will be taking on France. The women will play the winner of Belgium and France. That game scheduled to tip off here in about 30 minutes or so. They rolled to their 60th consecutive win as they completely dismantled Australia later today. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us like he does each and every Friday. We'll talk SEC football with Blake in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get into the list. We had some bad football last night. We had some bad weather, bad football. We had a Joe Milton sighting. I think we got the full Joe Milton experience. We'll discuss all of that. Of course, more from the Olympics. The men's soccer final just went final in Paris. That was actually a heck of a match. We'll discuss that. Also, Phil, have you been seeing the Shador Sanders Colorado football shade that's been going around online from everyone?
Update me.
We'll talk about it during the list because it's fascinating to me. So we'll discuss that. We'll get into games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But, Phil, I would like to read to you from the highly academic source, Wikipedia. The closing ceremony is scheduled to be held at Stade de France on 11th August 2024. Titled Records, the ceremony will center around a dystopian future where the Olympic Games have disappeared, and a group of space people will reinvent it. It is set to feature more than 100 performers, including acrobats, dancers, and circus artists. Tom Cruise is also set to appear in the ceremony.
That's why he's over there.
Well, I think he's also, I'm sure he's also cutting deals. It seems to me a lot of business gets done. It seems to me maybe not to the level like the Masters, where almost every Fortune 100 company basically wants to rent out an entire block of Augusta. it seems to me a lot of particular movie business gets done at this thing. Tom Cruise is also set to appear in the ceremony, and Red Hot Chili Peppers, should it not be the Red Hot Chili Peppers? Billie Eilish and Snoop Dogg will perform during the ceremony. The cultural presentation by Los Angeles, the host city of the 28 Summer Olympics, will be produced by Ben Winston and his studio, Fullwell 73. Okay, so I think the main thing with the closing ceremonies, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like they're typically not as long.
No.
And it's clearly not the ultimate show that the opening ceremonies are. Dystopian future? Space people? Like, didn't we kind of get over these stories in the 80s? I know we kind of had a little revival like maybe 10, 15 years ago, but haven't we kind of decided we're kind of done with dystopian futures?
You know, I'm guessing Tom Cruise loves that.
Well, there's no question on that, because I do think he's trying to bring back, what was the one where he dies every day? Is that War of the Worlds? No. War of the Worlds is the other one. What is the one where he dies and keeps coming back? It's like, I always mix it up. War of the Worlds is the one with Dakota Fanning. War is in the title. Tom Cruise. It's actually not a bad movie. I feel like it's on HBO about every 3 months. Huh. Okay, let's see. War of the Worlds is not the one I'm looking for. God dog it. Edge of Tomorrow. That's the one I'm looking for. This does feel like a Tom Cruise movie.
It does.
When you read it. That's a lot of range with the Chili Peppers, Billie Eilish, and then Snoop Dogg. I am curious to know. I wanted to know this. So we had the reports that Snoop Dogg makes $500,000 a day plus expenses. Does that include opening, closing ceremonies, or is it just competition days?
I would guess competition days with Snoop.
So at the bare minimum, NBC probably paid Snoop $8 million to go over there.
Hey, look, if they need someone else.
Yeah, I'm available for, I'm available for 1/8 of the price.
And Taylor Swift
yes.
could come. Taylor Swift could
she
come.
Is,
she's available.
She has some dates open up. She most certainly is. I don't think Taylor's in that business. She tells the Super Bowl no.
Yeah.
Because they try to get her every year. But then there was like 1 year where they were trying to get Super Bowl artists. It was in the ultimate NFL. They were trying to get the artist to pay to be the Super Bowl entertainment act.
I remember that.
That was bizarre to me. Also, heads up to all the heroes out there that have to buy Sunday ticket. You might have just gotten a random charge on your credit card today, this morning. That Sunday ticket $500+ bill hit this morning.
Ooh.
Well, because at first, so because it's now through YouTube TV, it comes up as like, I have the American Express app. And so anytime like something like that, I get a notification. And it's like $540-something from Google. And I immediately think like, oh God, I got hacked. Like identity, because I have passwords stored on my computer. Someone just hacked into my Google. And then I was starting to go through. I was like, what would that be? And then it clicked with me. It's like, football starts. And listen, the great thing about Sunday Ticket is Roger Goodell, for the good of all the fans, yes, he could have made the deal with Apple, who wanted to provide Sunday Ticket to fans at a reduced rate.
Yep.
And if you wanted a team specific, if you just wanted to watch, we're obviously in market for the Titans, but if you're Chicago transplant, you just want to watch the Bears, they were going to offer a team specific at a very reduced rate. Goodell could not let that happen for the good of the league. So we had to make sure we went with a partner that was going to charge full price and more than full price. And we've gone with Google. So that went through today. Awesome. That, when you do the all-in-one payment, because at least when it was on DirecTV, they would at least be kind enough to break it up. Like, you paid whatever. They prorated it based on the football months. And so you didn't have the jarring, here's the full price. When you see $500+ to watch football on Sundays, that does make you go, do I have a problem?
Now, you have Netflix, right?
If you name it, I've got it.
Okay. Those are the Christmas Day games.
Christmas Day games for Netflix. Obviously, we have to have Prime for Thursday night games.
Right.
So my $540 is just so I can watch football from the hours of like noon to 6:30 on Sunday. I guess technically I only pay DirecTV to watch Sunday night.
Do you know how much you pay during the course of a year to watch NFL?
Well, we can do the math quickly. We know we spend, let's see, that's exactly what that Google charge was. Well, then my wife kind of got mad at me. She's like, I thought we were going to threaten to quit and see if we could get the special price, whatever the new user price. And I was like, I really do think if there's any type of customer data on me, which I presume there will be, if I threaten to quit, they're going to laugh. When they're going to realize that this is someone who has bought Sunday ticket for I guess they'd have to technically go to my parents' data for this. But you could make the argument that I've bought Sunday ticket, I think, for 25 straight years.
Oh, my.
So me threatening to quit, I'm pretty sure is going to fall on deaf ears. Okay, so the other problem is how much of – I would argue whatever I spend on Prime, that's not for football, even though you get the benefits of football. I would argue Peacock is largely – Peacock's sports but not football. ESPN's probably football, but that's college football. I'm going to say over a year, probably $1,000 goes to football.
All right.
Now, I don't go to games, really. So that's how I justify it, is that I'm not spending any money really on tickets, and that would be my answer. But, yeah, no, it's not a good number to put. There are people that would make the case that's an addiction.
And there's a lot of people that have it.
You know what I mean? It is a ton of money to – it is a ton of money to really – I've watched way too many 305 games between 4 and, like, 11 teams that probably any normal human being should do. Okay, so I think it's possible we're talking about the closing ceremonies. Although I gotta say, in this weird reality of this dystopian future, which hopefully Tom Cruise is coming to save the world, because, to be fair, that's, like, 60% of my favorite movies, pretty much. You say Tom Cruise saves, I'm in. I don't even need to know like what he's saving, who he says, like, I'm in. I'm pretty much in at that point. So at least we could have that. I am worried, though, that I'm not sure I trust the French with these kind of things. Like, we've already seen that they are not afraid of artistic expression.
Well, yes.
So we could have that. All right, let's see what else. We're obviously going to have both the men's and women's gold medal games. I think still to come, we have breakdancing, which I think it debuted today. Excuse me, breaking.
Breaking,
apologize.
And it won't be there in 4 years.
So this is a one-off.
This is a one-off.
Are they meddling?
They are meddling, yes.
So this is not... Isn't there sometimes where they do like an experimental phase and you don't meddle, correct? It's to test?
And in my understanding, there is a medal. There is a medal in this year.
So, but
But they're not having it in 28.
Have they given a reason? Because why would they bring it in? Is this like something that France wanted?
I'm not sure of the background, but just to kind of get a look at it and see, you know.
To test it.
Do enough people, are enough people involved in it? You know.
Well, it is weird that I guess maybe they wanted to see like at the end when there's not as much going on,
mm-hmm.
how the reaction is. But I have noticed, and maybe it's the nature of track events versus swimming events, where it feels to me... Swimming is a longer, like in general, like obviously to swim 100 meters takes a lot longer than running 100 meters.
Yeah.
I feel like during the track events, there's more tuning in and out. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe with the swimming events, you're not as locked in. Excuse me. You're not as locked in the whole race,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like you're there longer.
Yeah.
So it does feel like everyone's starting to kind of wane off of Olympics right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be curious to know if so far I don't feel like their numbers have dropped, but at the same time, it just feels to me like everyone's kind of like, it's been a long time.
It does start to wear on you just a tad.
And I guess let's start with the men. I think you have to begin with these two thoughts. Number one, they are going for gold. But I do think it's very interesting that not only are you going to be playing France in Paris, I do think this Embiid thing kind of is it's an interesting wrinkle.
It is, and on all levels.
Well, and we've seen, it's curious to me because he had a couple of bad performances early, and it's like how much of that is him getting booed in France versus how much of it is he's been kind of inconsistent the last 6 months of basketball. He has games where he absolutely dominates, and then he has games where you're like, what are you doing? And so I think that's an interesting piece of it. But it seems to me, is there any narrative to write if they win? Because it almost feels like to me all the narrative would surround if they did not win.
On the U.S., not
France. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there'll be a lot with the Joel Embiid. Had he been with France, how do you view that game tomorrow? How do you break it down if he's on that team?
I think the only thing that would kind of complicate that is France actually is kind of loaded in the big department.
Yeah.
So you could almost say like it would be a crowd, but at the same time, I do think that Embiid is starting to get, he's obviously, everyone enjoys beating Rudy Gobert. Like, right. That seems to be kind of, like, everyone would agree, like, beating Rudy Gobert's fun. Like, it's kind of the one thing that brings everyone together. He's not quite to that level, but it does feel like watching Embiid, we've gotten to the point with Embiid where when he fails, we really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And even if he's on our team, we're now starting to be like, it's almost like it gives us an excuse to yell at something.
But if he was on that team, he'd be playing more than the 3 minutes a game that Rudy's playing, right?
I think that's safe to say. Well, I mean, now you have the whole thing is like, Rudy claims he's hurt, and his coach says he's not.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, well, that's weird. I mean, honestly, though, if you ask me who's lying in that one, it's like, well, yeah, Rudy's lying. Like, yeah. That would be the case. But then you always could have the situation where I feel like sometimes coaches are so nuts, they're afraid of like, well, if we admit that he's hurt, then people are going to start targeting him. But to me on that one, that feels like the simplest answer. Rudy is covering for the fact that he's clearly been benched.
Yeah.
That one makes the most sense. And then on the women's side, I mean, I think they're very much in the same boat. It's just I think them losing is, I mean, not impossible, but what's a step above that? Or a step maybe below it, I guess. How would you say? It's not a 0% chance, but it's in the I would not have seen that coming category.
Boy, it's hard to wrap your head around that.
I mean, today, I believe Australia had the second highest percentage of WNBA players.
Mm-hmm.
And that game was, I mean, I remember looking up 3 or 4 minutes into the game and you're like, well, that's that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just over.
Yeah.
And never got close. And I mean, I know Belgium did actually, weirdly, Belgium gave them a pretty good game. I think it was to start pool play. And they had this, little point guard that was giving them all kinds of hell, and they had one big in the middle. But that also felt like when you were watching in pool play, you're like, that would be bad for Belgium because it was the right spot to get them. Like, Team USA, maybe it was like the second game after like a blitzing. Team USA was pretty sleepy,
mm-hmm.
and they came out and just like blitzed them right off the bat. And so, like, that was, and then it kind of woke them up, and they put them away. That usually doesn't bode well for the rematch.
No.
When the scrappy team actually punches them in the mouth, but doesn't pull off the upset.
Yeah.
It does also, I am curious to know with the men, yesterday kind of felt like, it's one of my favorite Nick Saban speeches, after, I believe it was in 2012, when Alabama beat Georgia in a thrilling SEC title game. It's the one where Aaron Murray had the ball tipped at the line of scrimmage. They're driving. Ball gets tipped at the line of scrimmage. Winds up being in his receiver's hands. Gets tackled. They don't have any timeouts. Time expires. He had to remind his team that in 1980, after Team USA beat the Soviets in the Miracle on Ice, they still had to play Finland.
Right.
He was comparing Notre Dame in the national championship game to Finland. That does kind of feel like I know France is very competent as an international basketball team. It did feel like beating Serbia was going to be like that was the one that was like if that was the game to get Team USA. And usually, I feel like usually when you escape that one, the next one kind of you flex a little bit.
This could be lopsided.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially considering France does not shoot the ball very well. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like you saw what was going to be the path to beat the U.S. It was, all right, man, you're going to have to chunk up. You're going to have to chunk up at least 20, 25 threes, and you better make half of them. Like, that was the path.
I mean, is there a better list of, like, competitors, like, on the U.S. team? I mean, you've got, in the past, you could have a Kobe or a Bird, but to have, you'd have LeBron and Steph and Durant. I mean, Durant, you know, when crunch time is.
I do think that was a unique experience, particularly for those three, because we've had, obviously, all-star games. We've had Olympic teams. But we've never had those three on the floor competing for the same team and looking like whatever the game, the result of the game mattered.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever had that experience. Because all-star games are jokes.
They are.
And even though Durant and LeBron have played together, we have not had all three. And to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but those feel like the three most significant American basketball players of the last 20 years.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. I know they had talked years ago trying to make the All-Star game more interesting, more competitive, maybe an international team versus and those
things. They've thrown that out. Sir, I think it's in one of those situations where it's too late.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything you can do to change. The only thing you could do to change it, and I don't think the league would ever agree to it, is you'd have to somehow make it for money. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only way that they're ever going to take it seriously. And even then, they might take it seriously at the end, but
not.
I mean, they kind of view it as
a weekend off, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's kind of in that part of the calendar where, yeah, you can see the end of the regular season, but there's still nearly, what, two full months of basketball? Because it's usually the middle of February, and we're now taking the regular season to the middle of April. So even if you're, and let's be real, if you're an all-star, you're likely on a playoff team. I just think it's set up now to where it's viewed as, it's another, like what we were talking about earlier with Tom Cruise being over at the Olympics. I think it's a big, like, business convention. I think a lot of deals get done. It's clearly a party weekend. It's clearly, like, a fashion weekend, a statement. Like, it's that type of thing. I just think it's too far gone. It's like when we tried to save the Pro Bowl. Like, I do kind of tip my cap. At least the NFL got to a certain point where they're like, okay, we can't lie to them anymore. No one's taking this seriously. Like, we can't even do that. So let's think of something else. Now, I think what they thought of is a waste of time, but the point is, I don't know what there is to do.
Yeah,
like, and because you have to accept this reality. They're not going to take it seriously, but we're also not giving up the weekend. Like, that's the NBA's clearly sold the sponsorship, and the NFL is clearly going to try to make Pro Bowl weekend. They're trying to either take it to cities where they know they're not going to take the Super Bowl, or cities that maybe they want to get like a trial run for the Super Bowl. Did we do it again in Vegas this year? No, we did it in Orlando this year, I think. But I think we did it in Vegas last year, and I think that was kind of the deal. It's like getting logistically, they want to see how it operates.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not really sure how the Pro Bowl games gives you a trial run. Like, is that really bringing in droves and droves of fans?
I can't think of what an option would be for the NBA. I mean, if you're not going to play a game, what can you do that will hold the fans interested that have paid to attend the game?
I don't know, because I don't know if the international-national thing, I mean,
I'm not saying that would work. But
to me, like, that works if they all agree they're playing hard.
Yeah.
I just don't think that solves that issue. And then I think the other question becomes is, when you do national versus international, is that going to affect who makes the team? I mean, the reality is, if they've had, like, I think silver gets way too much air, like in hot air, and he's probably the most overrated commissioner in all of sports. Like this idea that he was like some type of humanitarian always drove me insane. He has actually had good ideas. It's just, as it pertains to this, it's just when you're starting from the position that they're not going to play hard, there's only so much you can do. I mean, I do think the picking of teams and putting it on TV, that was great. But I think that's the deal. It's like, if you have Team LeBron versus Team Steph or Team Durant, however you want to do it, and they're still not going to play hard, if they're not going to play hard in their own names on it, that to me screams like they're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
Now, I think the question, though, is did the players in particular this year, did they tank it more so than ever? Because they were apparently very upset. They were upset about the way the game was now starting to be officiated, and like they'd had their gripes and complaints. And allegedly, like, that was their form of protest because, as you pointed out, Silver kind of like tried to promise people they're going to play hard. Now, I would argue he wasn't promising us. What he was trying to do was he was at the, like, I don't know if he was at the 1 yard line, but he was probably at the 2 or the 3 with the TV deal. And he was trying to make sure everybody stayed happy. Like, they're going to play hard. You know what I mean?
After every NBA All-Star game, you see all these columns about how to make it better. Have you ever seen one that you think would work?
Not really.
I don't think
because it all comes back to, I don't actually think it's the format.
Yeah.
If it were the format, then I think there are solutions. It's kind of the same thing. It's where every time I read a column from someone making the case to shorten the season, let me be clear. I agree. Like, I think if you it seems very obvious to me, if you have a problem with your regular season being intense, you probably have too many games. So if you shorten the season, like, I agree that that would help. I also just ignore those columns because there's a 0.0% chance owners are ever going to agree to that. If anything, they're going to agree to a longer season.
Well, this is all what makes tomorrow so much fun. Just knowing that they're going to play hard from the opening tip.
And how many times can we really openly root for all of these guys?
Yeah.
Because it's easy to have mixed feelings about almost every one of the stars. And it obviously doesn't help that there's no Grizzly on. Like, if there's a Grizzly on, then it makes it a lot easier. But, like, if you are a Grizzlies fan, you feel a particular way about Kevin Durant. You feel a particular way about Steph Curry. I guess you can make the argument, maybe not as much as LeBron, because LeBron's been in the East for most of the peak of his powers. But if you're somebody that watches basketball, I find it really hard to believe you don't have some feelings one way or the other about him. But it is this one unique experience where he's driving into the paint and you're just going, make it. Like, whatever you do, make it. And I can't think of really any other way where you wind up having that experience.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about LeBron?
I've always said it was a lot easier when he didn't change his number all the time. But I've always said number 23 for the Cavs is my favorite player to watch play basketball. LeBron James might be one of my least favorite human beings. But it's that, and I think that's always what has fascinated me about him, which is when you see him in person, and now he's still not even peak of the powers, and he still has the draw, he still has the appeal. But when you see him at peak of his powers and you're in that building, I just every time was left just completely in awe of how amazing he was at basketball. And it's not just, like, more times than not, it's like when you see Giannis, you can be in awe of the pure, raw physicalness and the absurdity of how athletic he is. Mm-hmm. LeBron is obviously an absurd freak athlete, but it goes so far beyond that. It's like how he sees the floor. It feels like every movement he does on the basketball floor is designed to manipulate the defense. the way that he consistently got better as a shooter. It's just like, I felt like he always got better, even when, like, obviously now father time creeps in, but it's like, I felt like up into a certain point, like, he just kept getting better and better and better, and I was just always completely in awe of him.
And there are not many players you can say that about.
No.
You know?
No. It's like, basketball is like a craft to him, and I always admired that. Then when you say you don't have the right to freedom of speech, I'm not really a big fan of that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some SEC football. We'll do it next with Blake Topmeyer right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, back to Jeffrey Wright and Company, live from the Red River Toyota Studios. Check out Red River in Wynn, Arkansas. Jeffrey and Company on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Blake Topmeyer is the SEC columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. You can always read his work in the Commercial Appeal over at commercialappeal.com. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, did you see the New England Patriots get the full Joe Milton experience in a preseason game?
I saw some highlights. Yeah, I don't know that I digested the full experience, although there was one scramble that Milton went on that looked it looked like the full Joe Milton experience in the span of one play. At times, he looked extremely athletic during the scramble run that I saw. At times, he looked incredibly awkward. But it seems like you get more details than I do.
So we did have the scramble you're talking about. He had another like gorgeous pass. Now, granted, it's to an open receiver, but like it was he actually like scanned the whole field, found the right guy, hit him perfectly, and then we had the somehow Joe needs to trademark this. the 5-yard out that he misses by 10 yards. Like the one where he misses so badly that you're like, I don't really know how you did that. Like, I feel like that is the full Joe Milton experience. Like, where you can make the argument, man, if this guy just puts it together, he is the greatest football player we've ever seen. And then you realize, like, eh, maybe there's a reason why, like, it's, his entire career has looked the exact same.
Yeah, and after 6 years of college, I don't know that he's ever going to put it all together. I mean, I think he's at the point where if that would have happened, it would have happened by now. But maybe he should trademark Overthrow Joe. You know,
ooh,
I mean,
Johnny Manziel better. That's better. Yeah, and that gets on a T-shirt. That's much better on a T-shirt.
And I'm sure, like, at first he's like, I don't want to be known as Overthrow Joe, but sometimes you got to lean into the joke, right? Make some money off of it. That's how some Tennessee fans know him anyway, as Overthrow Joe. Some Tennessee fans also know him as Bazooka Joe, but I really think Overthrow Joe rolls off the tongue much better, and it helps explain how he's missing those 5-yard out routes. So, yeah, just lean into it and become Overthrow Joe. Put it on T-shirts and ball caps.
When we see Nico, is it going to make Joe look better or worse in hindsight when we see a full season of Nico?
It's going to make Joe look worse. But I think what it's really going to make worse,
Josh,
is it's going to look hypo look worse. And I don't know that it really was that bad of a decision, because, like, when you look at it through the lens of who was the better quarterback in the second half of last season, I think it was Nico. And I think anybody saying it was Milton is doing some lip service for the coaching staff. I'm not saying on September 1 Nico was the better quarterback,
sure,
but in the second half of the season, Nico was the better quarterback. But where I say I'm not sure it was actually a mistake, I don't know how many of Tennessee's losses would have been flipped to victories if Nico had been the starting quarterback instead of Milton. I actually don't think any of the results would have been flipped. I mean, you look at the Missouri game, which was maybe the one game that Tennessee thought it would win and lost, but that result doesn't flip with Nico. Like, I mean, unless Nico was going to play middle linebacker and start tackling Cody Schrader during that game, who ran for like 7 zillion yards, Tennessee still loses that game regardless of who the quarterback is. So, you know, from that lens, I don't really think it costs Tennessee anything, but when he goes out there and starts slinging it and is quite clearly a superior player to Milton, which is what I expect to happen, I do think there is going to be some whispers of why wasn't Heupel playing him at the end of last season. And the thing that Heupel probably won't say, but maybe believes, is I knew it wouldn't have made a difference in the record. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it did make a difference in the record, but that's not. Coaches just don't say that. But in some ways, I think he would be better off just saying, yeah, in the second half of the year, I knew Nico was a better player, but we decided to ride it out with a veteran and redshirt Nico because I didn't think it was going to affect our win-loss record either way. I think that's probably the truth of it.
I'm with you. Whenever I hear, listen, he was the better quarterback at that point in time, I'm with you. That doesn't have to apply to Joe Milton, to Nico. Like, whenever I just hear that talking point, I always know that is the coach justification. The one thing I will put stock into, and there's just really no way of knowing because I don't know truly how popular Joe is or isn't in the locker room. I do know that football teams can be very cliquish, and especially when new young guy that's making a ton of money is all of a sudden on the rise. I mean, see the WNBA right now. Like, I do know he might have been afraid. Listen, I don't think it's changing the record, and if it does change the record, I could have a team that gets mad because, you know, they want Joe to play and they quit on me.
Yeah, and I can kind of further that thread because from everything that I know and people I talk to, Milton was incredibly popular with his teammates. So I think you're probably right on that. You bench a sixth-year senior who had been the starting quarterback at the start of the year. And Tennessee was they were a top 25 team. It's not like you'd be benching him because the season became a disaster. The season kind of became what we thought it would be all along. And Milton didn't play horribly. He had, you know, some bad moments, some bad halves. But overall, he was, you know, a middle-of-the-pack SEC quarterback last year. So if they would have benched him, you know, I don't know that there would have been a locker room revolt, but I do think that it would have upset some guys in that locker room. And that's less of an indictment on Nico and more of just like, I think guys that had been with Joe for a few years thought that he'd earned that chance. And like I said, he wasn't playing horribly. He was playing okay. And it probably wouldn't have affected the record. So Yeah, I think overall, and that's why it's not as simple as yes or no when you, when this conversation comes up, like, did Heupel mess up? Like, I don't really think he messed up, but I do think he was playing the less good quarterback in the second half of the season. And for some people, it's black and white. Like, you just play the best player at that point in time and be done with it. But I do think that these things are a little bit more nuanced. It wouldn't have changed the record. It might have been an unpopular decision in the locker room, which kind of puts Nico behind the eight ball this year too, right? I mean, if people are still a little bit chapped over that change last year, you know, how does that affect the locker room this year? Which the way it went down was a smooth transition, and this was a team that wasn't going to the playoffs last year regardless. So I kind of say no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so we have our coaches poll that came out this week. As you being a good company man, do you know what USLBM is? Because I spent like 36 hours, and it took me a long time to figure out. I think it's like a building supply company.
I think it's a lumber company.
Okay.
Of some sort. So yeah, building supply, same vein there. But I was actually kind of horrified right after I published my initial column after the rankings came out, because it was only live like this for about 5 minutes. But I initially called it USLMB instead of USLBM.
Yeah, but no one could ever make that mistake.
Yeah, I thought, oh no, I'm going to get about 7 emails from company executives here. But fortunately, I caught my error within a few minutes, had it corrected, and no one was the wiser until I made this dramatic reveal to your thousands of listeners here. But yeah, I do have it straight now. It's USLBM. And they deal with some sort of lumber or building supplies.
I was stunned to learn that it wasn't a financial service. Like, I feel like anytime you get letters, like letters in the name, that's usually always a financial services package.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, I see like LBM, and I think like, you know, New York Stock Exchange call letters.
Yep.
I wonder, maybe they are sold on the ticker under LBM. Maybe I ought to be a good company man and look into that.
All right, this is this fascinating thing to me, because I can't tell if we're becoming wiser to the act as sports fans, or if it's the result of, we know, hey man, the poll that matters is the one that starts to come out in November. It's the playoff poll. But it has been surprising to me to see something that used to be kind of like a calendar day, which is preseason poll revealed, and you know, we're going to lead SportsCenter with it, here's the countdown. It did. Like, I was kind of proud of us as college football fans. Like, I didn't really see a ton of people like getting unnecessarily angry, which is, you know, that's not really normal for us in this sport.
Well, I think there's a few things, and I think part of it is the playoff rankings, but I think it goes much deeper than that. Like, used to be, you'd have these preseason magazines come out in print, and they would offer their top 25, but that's only for people that bought the magazine.
Yeah,
and then everyone was waiting for the release of, you know, the coaches poll and the AP top 25 to for a lot of people, it was their first time seeing a top 25 if they didn't buy a Lindy's or an Athlon or a Phil Steele. Well, now you got top 25 lists in every corner of the internet. Everybody's doing one, and they start about 47 minutes after the national championship game.
47?
Okay, yeah, maybe 47 seconds.
I was going to say, there's some people that definitely hit publish as soon as the game goes final.
Yeah, probably 47 seconds. Yeah. You're probably right. So I think by the time like the coaches poll comes out, you're like, wait, haven't I already seen this poll 17 times already? And it's like, no, you haven't actually seen the USLBM coaches poll. You've seen, you know, Athlon's poll and 24/7's poll and ESPN's poll and USA Today's poll that's separate from the USLBM poll. So I think that's part of it too, is just like pre-internet saturation, I think these polls mattered a lot more, not just because we didn't have the playoff rankings, but because people hadn't seen, most people, unless they were holding a copy of Lindy's, or Athlon, they hadn't seen a top 25 probably at any point in the offseason. And I think that all points too toward the growing reality that college football is now almost a 365-day-a-year type of sport in terms of the coverage that it receives, which it didn't used to be that way. It was a very seasonal sport in terms of the way most people covered it.
I did see that you were saying, brace yourself for Sankey to quote Sesame Street again. Just a quick little aside. Your boy's always been a huge Muppets guy. But now my 11-month-old daughter, she has taken quite the liking to Sesame Street. I mean, it is, I've got the word of the, or sorry, the letter of the day, the number of the day. Also, shout out to whoever, there's some creative genius, you need to look these videos up because they're actually like legitimately hilarious. Some creative genius came up with a segment on Sesame Street in which Cookie Monster and this other Muppet that they brought over from like a British show that they had, they have a food truck and they like, it's a cooking show and it's electric. Like it's Cookie Monster having his own cooking show. It's like, that feels like a free space in today's day and age, but just a quick aside, for those that have not gotten caught up on Sesame Street, it's still rolling pretty well.
Well, I'm glad that public funding that PBS receives is going to some good use, not only for you, but now for the next generation that you're raising.
The only shocker was Big Bird's not the host anymore. It's Elmo.
Contract.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I assume Elmo sells more. I assume it's because Elmo sells more units.
That's probably true. My niece carries around Elmo with her pretty much everywhere she goes. I've not seen her carry around a Big Bird yet, but Big Bird was the one that Sankey quoted when he said,
it's true.
One of these things are not like the other. Not, I don't know that Big Bird was the only Sesame Street character to have ever said that, but he was. Big Bird's the one that is associated with Moch, which was, of course, Sankey's campaign line when he was trying and succeeded in getting Alabama into the playoff last year, making the claim that the SEC is unlike any other conference, and so stand aside 13-0 Florida State. And he succeeded in that claim, and he gained more fuel for that claim, you know, with this preseason coaches poll. 9 SEC teams ranked in the top 25. It's the 9 that we would have expected. It's the 9 we've talked about on the playoff contention list. And all 9 are not only in the top 25, they're in the top 20. But it's less to me, you know, that's the quick reaction. But to me, it's almost less about the number of SEC teams and then some of the other, but some of the other subplots to me are more interesting. Big 12 has no teams in the top 12. Of course, we know they're going to get a minimum of 1 in the playoff, but I think this goes to show that you might have an auto bid from a Power 4 league be ranked like 14th in the polls and be a conference champion and get in the playoffs. So that was one of the things that jumped out at me. No Big 12 teams ranked in the top 12. The other thing is, like, sometimes we talk about the SEC and Big 10 as if they're equals, and I fall into that category too. I often do that. But
equals in power. Maybe not product.
Yeah, equals in power but not product. I think that's what this poll kind of hammered home, and I don't want to sound like a shill for the conference, for the SEC, because I don't usually drive in that lane. But when you see 9 SEC teams ranked in the top 20, and there are 6 Big Ten teams ranked in the top 25, but just 4 in the top 20, like I do still think there's a divide between these two conferences. And really, I think the better place to be is the Big Ten, because I think the Big Ten can get 4 qualifiers. You know, they're not going to get snubbed by the committee, but it's going to be easier to be among the top 4 teams in the Big Ten than it is to be in the top 4 teams in the SEC. I mean, I think if you're Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Penn State's got a pretty favorable schedule. Those 3 teams, I think, are sitting pretty good, darn good from the Big Ten just in their preseason outlook, because I think the Big Ten's going to get a minimum of 3 qualifiers, and I think those 3 teams are in good shape. Michigan's the one that I'm kind of waffling on, because I think they would be that 4th team from the Big Ten if they get 4. But of those 4, Michigan plays the toughest schedule, including playing Texas in a non-conference game. So I don't know. I was starting to pencil in 4 from the Big Ten, but I just don't see a ton of great depth from the conference. And so if Michigan falters, which I think is realistic, you know, I could see the Big Ten only getting 3, which would be great news for the Big 12 and the ACC if they're hoping to get 2 bids.
Yeah, because I'm with you. Part of me wonders, are we overthinking it with Michigan? Like, we know, obviously, they have lost a lot on the offensive end, I would argue. But they're also bringing back a lot. And they're also bringing back almost everyone of significance on defense. And I just wonder if, hey, man, we've kind of started to see you can have a little bit more success now kind of playing the old play unbelievable defense, you know, suck the clock down by running the football. Like, we've seen teams kind of go back to the Saban, you know, boa constrictor formula.
Right.
I just wonder, like, man, are we really sleeping on them? Because I know there's going to be two things that they're going to do. They're going to run the football, and they are going to play unbelievable defense.
Yeah, the defense part I don't worry about so much. With the establishing the run game, they want to do that. That's not going to change. But it's even more so than losing Blake Corum. It's they lost so much from that offensive line, and that unit really powered them in addition to their defense last year. And so, you know, I do think there's a tendency to think of a program like a Michigan and be like, oh, they'll plug and play on the offensive line and everything will be fine. I don't know. It might be okay, but that was a dominant group last year, and they lost a ton up front on offense. So, and I mean, let's face it, they had a cakewalk schedule.
Oh, last for
year
sure.
Too. I'm not saying they weren't the best team.
No, but no, like, their schedule made it so that they really, you know, at the core of their schedule, they knew they were going to be healthy for the most part.
Yeah, and then in the playoffs, they didn't have to play Georgia because yep. Georgia doesn't get in. And so, I mean, like, the whole season was really tailor-made for Michigan to win the national championship, and they won every time out, so they deserve credit for that. But their schedule is kind of 180 this year.
And I would also argue this. They also – I think if Michigan was going to win a national title, they needed it to be a year where the best team didn't have, if not the best quarterback, but like a first-round quarterback. So they wouldn't – I think if they would have gotten into the game – if they would have gotten into the game where they had to just go shot for shot, I think that would have given them problems.
I totally agree. And you know, we have the Harbaugh effect too. Like, you know, first-time coach.
Yep. First-time coach and first-time quarterback.
That's right. So I don't think they're heading off a cliff, but I do think 9-3 is certainly within the realm of possibility. And I think so much of it comes down to the week 2 game against Texas. I mean, Texas had the you know, very unfortunate injury this year to or this week to its top running back, C.J. Baxter. And that, you know, running backs don't mean what they used to, but it does have me kind of reevaluating Texas. Like, I almost had Texas as a shoe-in for the playoff, but I start to look at that week 2 game between Michigan and Texas, and no, it's not a playoff eliminator, but knowing what lurks on the rest of the schedule for each of those teams, if you were to ask me in week 3, I think I would say whoever loses that week 2 game, I think I lean on them not being a playoff team. I think that game is so important. When we look at September games that are going to have a huge, huge impact on the playoff, I don't think there's a bigger one than Texas and Michigan. Yeah, there is technically room for both of them in the playoff, but I think the path gets really narrow for either team that loses. Now, if you win that game, I think you're sitting in a pretty good spot to, you know, get to at least 10-2. You got that marquee win in week 2 in the non-conference. I think you'd be in good shape. You lose that game. I mean, Texas is on the road at Texas A&M to end the season. They got neutral site with Oklahoma. They have Georgia. It takes a couple more losses and they're out. And then you look at Michigan. They have Ohio State. They have Southern Cal. They have I think it's either Washington or Oregon or maybe both. They drew one of the tougher schedules in the Big Ten this year, and so that week 2 game, if they lose at home too, I mean, and then that strengthens the reputation of the SEC as a whole and weakens the Big Ten's reputation. That's a critical one for each program. I actually think it's even more important for Michigan because it's a home game than what it is for Texas. I think that'd be really damaging for Michigan to lose that game.
The other side of that question, because this is, I feel like I'm now in peak question everything that I developed over the summer. Am I alone in thinking it's kind of weird that we've gone from never giving Texas the benefit of the doubt to just now it feels like we just blindly give them the benefit of the doubt? And it's like, we did that basically like in 12 months. And by the way, like, it wasn't like they had some perfect season last year. They stubbed their toe against Oklahoma, and then they stubbed their toe against Washington. It's like, now they're in new league. Like, I wonder if we maybe jumped the gun on blindly trusting Texas too much.
Yeah, and I don't know that it all has to do with Texas. I think one game looms so large in the mind when we're trusting Texas. We think back to the win at Bryant-Denny Stadium last year when Texas looked really physically dominant. Alabama was having issues with its offensive line at that point in the season. Jalen Milroe was not the quarterback that he became later in the year. And the scoreboard looked a little closer in that game than I think it actually was. I thought Texas dominated that game really wire to wire. And I think that beating Saban in his house in front of that fan base and just a venue that Alabama loses so infrequently throughout, you know, really every year but the first season of the Saban era, I just think that that game still looms large in everyone's minds. And it's like, yeah, Texas, you know, bows out in the playoff semifinals. They lost to Oklahoma. But I think if you ask people, just John Q fan, like, why do you trust Texas so much? I think that one of the first things they would go to is, well, they won at Alabama last year in September, and they looked really darn good doing it. And that was almost a year ago, and that was one game. And so, you know, I think you might be on to something to say, like, are we trusting Texas a little too much? And we might be, but I think that's the reason why. I don't even think it's so much that it's Texas and, you know, this has been a sleeping giant. We've been waiting for them to be quote-unquote back. I think that's part of it. I just think beating...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.